For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night! And welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, the most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight, this is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy, it's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us, we don't do interviews, we do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill, we drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
Donald Osborne, who's an evaluator, you know him from Jay Leno's Garage, great guy, encyclopedic knowledge. We'll interview him. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Indy race at Long Beach that Matt was at last weekend. All coming up. First, I'll tell you about Trico. Over a century ago, Trico was the first to make wiper blades. That's right. Innovation, man. And they've been a step ahead of Mother Nature ever since. Trico engineers, they study specific driving conditions, so you're ready for anything. I don't care if it's raining actual cats and dogs, Trico is ready for you. Whatever the weather, Trico wipers maintain maximum windshield contact, no matter what your driving habits. You'll always find the right wiper blade for your vehicle, and that is why everyone here uses Trico. And the people who know their way around cars, and that's us, swear by Trico. Trico, the future of wipers since 1917. That's right, going back over 100 years. To find a store near you and see the latest offers, visit TricoCatsAndDogs.com. That is TricoCatsAndDogs.com. Got to get on the church. They're going to mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. It's CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello. How are you?
Doing good. Busy, but good.
Yeah.
How about you?
Same. Got some events and travel in Vegas and Arizona and St. Louis and Vegas again and SEMA show. And took a little break, made it out to the Grand Prix of Long Beach.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was out of town.
But had some track lobster.
Nice. How'd the event go?
It was good. It was a different, right, because it's normally in April. This is September. A lot of cloud cover. It seemed like great weather for racing in a nice, cool air.
Thicker air.
And so it was a good event. I would say it felt like attendance was down, and a proof of vaccination was required. So there's a line just blocks and blocks just trying to get in. Now, it went quicker than I thought, but this is one of those events where, like, I was talking to Goldberg about it, you know, because we just did a SummerSlam. When you go to a venue that handles this type of, you know, a Staples Center and a Legion Stadium, there's multiple entries. They can get a lot of people in and out of that building quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do a pop-up event of this scale, you can't have three dudes at a fold-up table checking vaccination cards. You need 15 people.
Right.
Right, because that line is just going.
It's an outdoor event,
And to be fair, they were a little they understood the time constraints. They were a little light loose on everything. First of all, they didn't check IDs. They just checked for the vaccination card. So there was no correlation as to who you were.
It's all just theater at this point.
It kind of is.
You turn on the fucking TV on a Saturday and there's college stadiums around the country packed with human beings.
Yeah.
And there was no vaccination mandates or cards at those college games. So what the fuck is the difference?
It was just a little weird. And what threw me off was, is I went Sunday to watch the Indy race and the trucks, but I wanted to get there to check out the vintage race. Mm-hmm. And because we were in line for so long, I missed the vintage race. So that part was a little, a bit of a bummer. But the race was fantastic. Colton Herta won. Joseph Newgarden was second. Scott Dixon was third.
Herta, is he Brian Herta's kid? Did you say Herta?
Herta, H-E-R-T-A.
That must be Brian Herta's kid.
You know, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yourself the moderator?
Well, I'm not the race guy. But this was also the end of the season, being in September. So it was the championship as well. So Alex Palou, who came in fourth in the race, number one in the points. He's your season champion. Joseph Newgarden is second, and Pato O'Ward is third. Those are the ranks now. But I was talking to the guys from Acura. It's Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach now. So that's the title sponsor. And they were saying the plan is to get back on the normal schedule for next year. So although they did this event now in September, they're already planning for an April event.
Oh, good.
Yeah, which is a fun event to go to. We can go back and maybe catch a little bit more sun. But
Colton is Brian's son.
There you go.
Brian Herta's a pretty famous Indy driver, probably retired. Although, for some reason, I think I may have saw something where he was still driving or doing something.
Well, there might be more about the son now, is why he's probably...
Son can't be much older than 19 or 20.
Yeah, he's a young guy. He's obviously very fast.
His team won the 2011 Indy 500, Brian's team.
Brian's team.
Yeah, he runs Brian Herta Autosport, so that's what...
But Herta wasn't driving in 11?
No, the driver was Dan Weldon.
Oh, Dan Weldon. Oh, that's right. So, who passed, right?
Yeah.
Herta must have won Indy 500, maybe, I don't know, 03, 02, or something like that.
His best finish in Indy was eighth in 2005.
Oh, well, then did he win the championship, the points championship in 01, 02? He was a pretty significant driver back in the day. Also, I do believe there was an incident with Herta where he... he may have hit a track worker or some version of that, killed somebody. Willie T. Ribbs had that situation in Canada as well. But there was a Canadian, Brian Herta, I think a fellow driver died in a crash in Canada with Herta racing in that in maybe 01 or some version of that. It's just, these are all just scattered thoughts from Loveline, 20 years ago. But I do remember some version of that.
You had him on Loveline?
Brian Herta used to come on to Loveline, I would say more than once, but I don't remember, tons of appearances. But he definitely was on, and there was definitely an incident involving him or a co-driver or fellow driver or something where there was a death, and I believe it was a Canadian race.
In the opening laps of the 98 event at Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin's Road America Circuit, Herta was involved in one of the scariest racing incidents in the history of North American motor racing. In the four-mile road course's fifth turn, Herta got too close to the back of the car of co-owner Ray Hall and spun out into a paved runoff area facing oncoming traffic. A few seconds later, an ESPN camera that had zoomed in on Herta's head pulled back when Herta clenched his fists and put them against the sides of his head. As course workers scattered, Alex Barron slid into the front of Herta's car and rode up on top of it. Both drivers were okay. Herta reported that Barron's car had actually hit his hands, only inches from his face.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was a hairy one. But I still think there may have been a death on another another
in his bio.
Another event.
Yeah.
Yeah, might not be in his bio.
Scary. Yeah.
Still have a Canadian. Yeah, I was just telling somebody just the other day, you know, the danger of racing is not so much the racing, but if you get spun out and you come to a stop and you're on the track or right. near the track, and then you are basically a sitting target and somebody hits you at 170 miles an hour, that's the problem. It's not when everyone is traveling at 170. I mean, that can be enough, but we think back to Steve Millen in his Z car when he sort of spun it out and he was trying to get right. it back on the track, and he was just T-boned, you know, in a very horrific crash.
Even in the pro celebrity race from years ago, I think Brett Davern got T-boned, right? He was like kind of off to the – he was crashed or something off to the side, and the workers were already out there like
yeah.
getting him, and he got T-boned, which was scary because he was in the process of like getting out of the car, and he got hit.
Yeah.
I tell you,
they always tell you, stay in the car. I mean –
yeah, but the workers were there.
Not Brent's. Not Brett Davern's fault, but I'm just saying, in general, they always just tell you, stay in the car, wait for people to come yeah. get you out of the car.
I tell you, the halo in the windshield makes a big difference.
Oh, my God.
Think
about that Herta crash we yeah. just described, you know.
Seeing the cars up close in person and the display car and you know, just the amount of protection that provides, it's pretty significant, and I'm sure it's very welcomed by the teams and the drivers once they kind of got used to adapting to it. But that's why they're professional drivers. They figured it out, but it makes a big...
Is that halo thing. Carbon fiber?
I don't know if it's carbon fiber or titanium.
Oh,
the halo might be titanium, and I think it has a spine in the middle, and then it has some sort of windshield on it. I don't know. Obviously, it's not glass. It's going to be some sort of plexi something or other.
Yeah, Lexan maybe.
Yeah.
Does F1 have the glass
on
there?
I don't think they do.
I don't think they do either.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I think they just have the halo. And again, I couldn't say what it's made out of, but I thought I had read at some point it was titanium. I could be wrong, but...
Well, Don Osborne, who I think of as Donald Osborne... But is that the singer?
I always thought Donald Osborne so much. Yeah.
Was that, isn't it Donald Osborne? I mean.
Yeah, but it's Donald.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. So from Jay Leno's Garage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That Donald.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because now that it said Donald, I was like, is this a different guy?
Yeah, it'd be helpful to have Donald Osborne
okay,
on there because I think
that's Donald Osborne. That's the bow ties.
That's how we know him. With the bow tie.
With the bow tie.
And the singing.
That's right. And the singing.
That's Donnie.
That's his Donnie mode. Also, yeah. Which is funny because when I see him do that, I think of Drew as well because Drew can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people know Drew can do that.
I don't know what a lot of people know. But yes, Drew can do that same sort of opera
right.
singing that he will do to ring in, to herald the arrival of his segment when they evaluate cars at the end of Jay Leno's Garage. Yeah, I guess that hoop is titanium, which makes sense to me. The halo is titanium. Anyway, Donald Osborne is going to join us soon, and we'll talk to him about cars and evaluations and life and his role in that world. Also, did you go down there? Who'd you see?
So that was the thing, was because the race is Sunday and it's the ceremonies and the and whatnot, I didn't actually get to talk to the drivers. When you go and the cars are going out to the field, basically, to start, and they do the open... All the teams are packing up. They're like, that's it. All we got to do is load up the car and go home. There's no more pit or anything. So because we were in line, I didn't get the chance to go up and talk to like Bobby Rahal and Graham Rahal and Simon Pagenaud, friends of ours that we go and see on a regular basis. Because of the schedule change, I usually go Saturday and Sunday. Saturday we can go in more of a social thing, and then Saturday watch the race, but couldn't go Saturday. I'm I'm going to rethink it, put it back to the normal schedule for April and go out. So I didn't get to say hi to those. I was, you know, I had emailed ahead of time to Bobby and Graham and said, you know, good luck. And, you know, you said good luck and you're going to be out of town and, you know, hope to run into you guys. But they were just on the track the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And there was the truck race as well.
Which is fun. Lots of carnage. Of course, that's after the IndyCar race because they just, you know, screw everything up. You know,
it's a crazy sport.
Yeah. The Trophy Truck Race. So the vintage race was in the morning, like, I don't know, like a 10:45 to 11:15 or something.
Was that a Formula Atlantic race?
Yeah, and I didn't get to see it, which I was bummed about. And as we were in line, we got to hear some of it. And then the whole Indy thing, which takes up most of Sunday, and then the trophy trucks come out. They bring the jumps out. We saw some of that, and then we watched some of it on the screens. And it's as much fun as you always think it is. It's always weird to me. It's like, why do they run the knobby tires on the street? Mm-hmm. But probably it's the only tire you can get for those things.
Probably, yeah.
You know, but just banging into each other and body pieces coming off those trucks and flipping up on. And then just for fun, like they're all up on two wheels at some point, especially toward the end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's really fun if anyone hasn't checked out the sort of track asphalt trophy truck racing.
It is fun.
I would venture to say, but Chris can look it up, I would bet you that on that track, the Formula Atlantic cars get around it as fast as the Indy cars do. I'm using a theorem here, which is my go-kart theorem, which is like a shifter cart will get around a track like that, like as fast as an Indy car.
Especially around like the fountain, like when you got to go down almost five miles an hour.
There's a couple of straightaways, you know, Shoreline being the longest, and the Indy's cars, I'm sure, will pull the Atlantic cars on that. But then there's a lot of really tight bits and pieces on that track. And I bet those guys can match the lap times of the Indy cars. Plus, if they're vintage, they may even be running wider slicks than the Indy cars are today, with a lot of the regulations and things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, the first one or two laps, especially around the fountain, there's always a little bit of carnage. So right off the beginning of the beginning of the race, as everyone's so bunched up, they already had a yellow flag,
you know? On the Indy race.
Yeah, on the Indy race.
see if you can get any lap times for that, Max Pat. I'll tell you guys about Mack Weldon. Yeah, you're busy. Stop thinking about what to wear and embrace Mack Weldon's daily wear system. A selection of clothes with smart design, performance fabrics built to work together, from breathable t-shirts and polos to stylish button-ups, shorts, underwear, and beyond. I love my Mack Weldon stuff. I've frequently worn it on Kimmel and other shows where I'm going to be on camera because it looks that good. For the ultimate lazy Sunday, their Ace sweat shorts. Ooh, I like that. Pair perfectly with their ultra soft, ultra upgraded Pima tees. For weekend travel, they have their silver knit polo and Radius shorts, and they're the perfect high-tech, highly packable combo. It's Mack Weldon, right, Matt?
Yeah, you know, buy some time this summer with the Mack Weldon Daily Wear System. You know, for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/CarCast and enter promo code CarCast. That's MackWeldon.com/CarCast, promo code CarCast for 20% off your order. It's Mack Weldon, radically efficient wardrobing.
Donald Osborne has joined us via Zoom. We do call you Donald, not Don, correct?
That is absolutely correct, Adam. I am a Donald.
All right.
All right.
You should stop writing Don on everything. Well, thankfully, I'm a big fan, and I've watched your career for quite some time. Of course, I see you on Jay Leno's Garage, so I know to call you Donald.
It's a terrific thing. Actually, it's a great point of separation, because there are people that say, oh, yeah, I'm really close personal friends with Don.
Right.
And then we sort of know. Yeah.
Then we know.
Who are we talking about?
Which is very interesting because in Hollywood, you'd say Bobby De Niro if, in fact, you were close friends with him. So this is actually, we flipped the script.
Right.
Go the long version. That's how you know you're truly a fan. Thanks for joining us, Donald.
A pleasure.
Let's talk about you and your background and how you got into evaluations. It's something I've always been kind of fascinated with, and now more than ever. I mean, we were just speaking last week about the Tom Cruise 928 going for 1.9 and change. Let's call it $2 million. How did this start for you?
Well, it was very interesting. I mean, it started with my great love of cars. I've been through five completely different careers, which is, I think, certainly not a record, but certainly up there. I trained as an artist in high school, wanted to become a car designer because I loved cars from the time I was a kid. Went to school instead for music, for opera, trained as an opera singer. I had been singing with the Metropolitan Opera from the time I was 17 years old, and pursued a singing career, all the while keeping cars in the background. Then worked in retailing, worked in marketing communications, advertising, corporate image and branding, always cars in the background, and decided around 2003 that I really should probably do something with the car thing. And I had been writing for Sports Car Market magazine for a number of years at that point, and a very good friend of mine, Dave Kinney, who was also writing for Sports Car Market at the time, said, you know what, I'm an appraiser, and I think this would be something that actually might suit you. You like research, you like detail, you like cars. And so why not give it a try? So I joined the American Society of Appraisers, got my certification and an accreditation, and started doing appraisals full-time in 2004, and have not looked back.
Well, where do you see the market right now? I've been kind of speculating that in the uncertain inflationary world, possibly Joe Biden, who knows what's around the corner. I feel like the younger people are thinking about Bitcoin, but the older people are thinking about cars and memorabilia and a Steve McQueen windbreaker. Does that make sense to you, Donald?
It makes a lot of sense from a number of points of view. One is the economic point of view, and the other is a sort of an emotional societal point of view. The market's really been moving in this direction for the last, it's been a big movement for the last probably 14 or 15 years. Towards the experiential part of the spectrum. People aren't buying cars to look at, they're buying cars to use, whether it's racing, rallying, touring, showing it at car shows, whatever it might be. People want something that adds something to their lives. And that's really what has been driving value. And it's also quite interesting that having just come through the pandemic, or coming through the pandemic, people also realized, what am I waiting for? Am I waiting for the golden years? You know, looking awfully yellow out there right now. Why not just go for what it is that I've always wanted? And then the fact that interest rates have been so incredibly low. If you've got savings in cash, it's sitting in a bank collecting dust. So it might as well collect dust in your garage so you can actually clean it every now and then. And even for young people, Bitcoin is terrific, but Bitcoin isn't sexy. Bitcoin is no sexier than a stock certificate. You know, young people are interested in having something that entertains and challenges them and also gives a sense of community. People want to get together with other people who love these items. You don't get together in Bitcoin conventions and have a party.
You know, you talk about the events, and Adam and I have been, you know, obviously been going to a lot of events for quite some time, and we start to see the attendance increase, obviously a pre-pandemic, but we start to see year-over-year Monterey Car Week attendance start to go up, and then, a Rennsport, and then even new events like Radwood, which is a fun event, how fast Lufkakult grew in just a number of years. But are those events starting to attract the younger audience as well? Are those events going to get big and then die off, or are they going to last?
Well, you just gave me a wonderful opportunity to make a shameless plug, and I love shameless plugs. The answer to your question is yes, they do attract younger people. And again, it gets back to the experiential part. I think that cars and coffee and the cars and coffee phenomenon has really had a big effect on that. A lot of the traditional sort of brand mark model clubs had been struggling a bit to attract members because they typically had a format where people drove to a restaurant, had lunch, chatted for a bit, and drove away. Also, the traditional sort of one-day concours d'elegance on a golf course with people sitting behind their cars in lawn chairs also is something that doesn't seem to be attracting a growing audience. But the cars and coffee phenomenon, where people can come for a few hours and see a wide variety of cars and meet lots of interesting new people, talk to them, get to learn about their cars, talk about the car you brought, that plus, again, the experiential. Here in Newport, Rhode Island, where I live, we're just about to start the Audrain Newport Concours and Motor Week. And it's a multi-day event with a wide variety of events for all sorts of people and their levels of engagement with automotive enthusiasm. And also something that we started here in Newport with the 30 under 30 class, which is the brainchild of our friend Jay Leno. The idea of having a concours class for owners of cars who are 30 years older or younger, had $30,000 or less invested in their cars. So the fact that it's providing access to people, and it's all about the access that brings them into larger events that are sort of more formal, as it were, in the field. Plus, the field of collecting has just grown. There are more interesting cars that are newer now. It's a funny thing, and I know that I can't say I know that you, Adam, would understand this because you're old like I am. But it's so funny. I was talking about some car the other day, and I said, oh, you know, that's not an old car. And I realized it was a car from the 90s, and that's 30 years old. So when I was first getting into cars, I also, the first cars I looked at were 30-year-old cars. And I'm sure there were adults that thought, oh, those are just used cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I remember some of the race cars I have from the 80s not too long ago were just not considered vintage race cars, you know. Anything tube frame was really not considered vintage. It had to have a tub.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's something I've always said about the hobby, which is, you know, you eventually everything's going to be vintage, you know, and and I have, you know, race cars from the 90s, and you think, yeah, same thing. Feels new to us because we were out of high school. But to my 15-year-old son, that is an old-ass car.
Right.
And I'm an old-ass man. And, you know, speaking of some of those 90s cars, you know, we've been noticing that a lot of the Japanese stuff, some Skyline stuff.
NSX.
NSX stuff.
Supras.
Yeah, first things first, you know, Japanese was neither here nor there. You know, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And certainly Japanese 90s. I think it's some of the Skylines we've seen, 91, 92, I think early 90s, have recently gone for maybe $250,000. I mean, that is a quantum leap.
Yeah. An Integra, you know.
R, yeah.
Yeah. The Type Rs and stuff. What's your feeling on the Japanese car market?
Well, I think that it reflects, again, the fact that the collector car field, the spectrum is growing. I like to compare it to art. People have been collecting art for a really long time, since the Romans collected Greek art. Car collecting is fairly new, since basically after World War II in most of the world. And so what we're seeing also here is that the basic standards of evaluating any collectible item are applying to cars. So it's not simply when it was built. It's what did the car mean to its period? The cars like the Integra R, the Skyline, were great performance cars that showed their manufacturers taking the brands in a new direction or establishing technology in a mass-produced car. We'll call it a mass-produced car, although the Skyline, certainly the performance versions, are not common cars, but they're still... It's basically a serial production car. And it is one of those things that they made lots of boring cars in Japan in the 1990s. And those cars will not particularly gain in great value or interest as time goes on. But the cars that really sort of move the marks somewhere, especially like the NSX, for instance, are certainly notable for all the reasons why historic Ferraris are notable, historic Jaguars are notable, whatever it might be. It's because of their specific attributes that's what makes them interesting.
Let me ask you a sort of a market evaluation question. So Leno has famously said that he drives all of his cars and he, you know, I'll paraphrase, I'll drive them down and restore them back up. But what we see a lot of now, especially with these 80s and 90s cars that you're talking about, you know, pop up on Bring a Trailer in certain auctions, you're seeing, you know, a GNX with 120 miles on it, Mustang Cobra Rs with 9 miles, NSX super low miles, Integra Type Rs super low miles. It kind of takes the experience out of it, right? Because a lot of it is we look at those cars and go, yeah, it's a big money car. Somebody's going to spend a lot of money on that car because it's got 300 miles. But then what do you do with it? You know, like, I mean, you have to have a massive collection and not drive all of the cars. I guess my thought is, well, what is your thought on those low mile cars? Are they worth it? Can they never be driven at that point? Right.
I've got three things to say on that. My first is my own personal opinion, which is that the cult of the undriven car is a very, very, very misguided one. Cars are meant to be driven, especially the cult of the undriven high performance car, which is like saying, I'm going to buy the Mona Lisa, but hang it on my wall facing the wall so that the sun doesn't hit it. Right. What's the point? And the second thing is the fact that as a long-term trend in collecting, the undriven car, in my view, generally does not last because it cannot be used. By actually using the car as it's meant to be used, you are thereby drawing down that interest for that particular part of the market. It is also something that every car, when people talk about investments in cars, you always have to be careful because, of course, the car is the one investment that actually costs you money to own. Since you actually have to maintain it. And I have certainly seen, as I'm sure the two of you have as well, cars with very low mileage that actually need work because cars deteriorate. The rubber deteriorates, all sorts of soft parts, even paint can begin to deteriorate. And when you have also a super low mileage car, an undriven car, that someone then wants to just try out, you are faced with the challenge of actually having to do a major service that borders on a light restoration because you have to go through every one of the mechanical systems because otherwise the car is undrivable. So you're taking a piece of kinetic sculpture and making it fixed sculpture. If the car is a beautiful design, then it might work. Ultimately, I think that the cost to a collector to maintain a collection of undriven cars will prove far too high and people will lose interest and they will not have the secondary value in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it also puts the owner in a sort of untenable position or bad position, which is you buy this car, forget about the make and the model, but let's just say the average trading price for the car is $200,000. But you paid $300,000 because your car only had 80 miles on it.
Yeah.
So now you understand that you paid a premium for this car, and the only reason you paid a premium is because it has such low miles on it. And so now it's hard to justify driving the car because you're essentially bringing it down to the market price, which is well off of what you paid for it.
It seems like that's an attribute that doesn't increase in value over time. It actually depreciates a little bit. Paying the premium for the car with 80 miles on it, years from now, I think the gap of the 30,000 mile car and the 80 mile car starts to close a little bit.
Yes.
And at some point, you know, you want a Lamborghini Miura SV. If you find one with 27,000 miles or find one with 87,000 miles on it, if the conditions are the same, they're pretty much the same price.
And you agreed with my points exactly there. And the other point is the fact that the theoretical person who paid $200,000 for the higher mileage car and actually drove the car and then sells it for $220,000 not only has an extra $20,000, but the experience of having driven and enjoyed the car.
Right. Got to take it to those events and show it off and hang out.
Yeah. Donald, you were touching on, you know, people want to have the experience and the shared experience of, you know, the cars and coffee and the events and all that, which I totally agree with. The word that it's been coming back to me quite often, and we've shared it with the audience before now, is story. People want a story. And, you know, circling back to the low mileage, unfortunately, that's their story. You know, they go, well, they made 25,000 NSXs, but this one has 4 miles on it and it still has the cellophane around the steering wheel. Yeah. That's their story. You know what I mean? And, you know, obviously a Jeep is 20 grand, but if Steve McQueen owned the Jeep, then that's the story, you know? And I think people talk about it in terms of this guy owned it or that guy owned it or it raced here or Dan Gurney drove it. What they're saying is a story.
Right.
Everyone wants the story. And that seems to be a bigger part now, because back in the day, it was just you get a Mercedes Gullwing and that's the story. It's a Gullwing. They didn't make that many of them. That's the story. But now you could go to Cars and Coffee and have 5 guys pull up in a Gullwing and now your story's not so good. So let's talk about the story. I feel like that is more where we're heading. You know, you take that painting. I'll think of the artist. Shredded, for instance.
Yes. Like a Banksy.
The Banksy painting. Yes. Well, the thing's worth 5 times more now after it was shredded, because that's the story.
Right. There's a huge story around it and how it happened. Right.
Right. Tell us your thoughts on the story.
Well, I think that you're absolutely correct, and it brings me back to one of my favorite movies, which is not a very good movie, but nonetheless, of its type, I think it's absolutely brilliant, and what it expresses is, to me, at the heart of why I love cars and why so many people do, the yellow Rolls Royce. And the idea of this car and showing how it affected and entered and lived with these three various owners of the car. And that Rolls-Royce Town Car is far more interesting for having been delivered new in London to a fellow who sold the car. He bought it as a gift for his wife. He sells it because he finds out that his wife has had an affair with his aide, and they had a tryst in the car, so the car had to go. And then it ends up in a used car lot in the south of France, where an American mobster on the run and his girlfriend find the car, and they buy it, and they have adventures with the car. And then it ends up in the hands of a woman helping partisans during World War II in Greece. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. And the car has a life of its own. The person who bought it knew why they bought it, who built it, where it was sold, where it was delivered, what happened to the car, is to me one of the most important things. I'm extremely fortunate that I am the second owner of a 1953 Jaguar Mark VII sedan. I bought it last year at auction from the estate of the original owner. It's absolutely complete with every book, tool, record, photographs in the car of the owner and his wife going out to dinner in it. It was a gift from the original owner's father to him when his first child was born. It's an amazing story this car has to tell, just in its life that it's lived. And that's the kind of thing that I want to see in a car, and I'd love to share with people about the car.
So before we let you go, give us some idea of the market right now, ideas on some cars that you think are on the move, others that may not be as great an investment. It feels to me that Ferrari in general has been kind of flat for a while. I mean, they were everything for a long time. Then Lamborghini popped up, and then Lamborghini flattened out, and now Lamborghini's going up. So there's definitely trends in the market. We have cars like the Jaguar 220 supercar, the XJ220, which we've always thought is $1 million car, and it's hanging out at, you know, $475,000. But I still think that'd be a good investment down the road with other more modern supercars making their move. But, You tell us, Donald.
It's a tough thing to answer in just a few minutes, because I'll just start with the Jaguar XJ220. The Jaguar XJ220 is a really funny car because it's a car that people love to buy but don't love to own. So they change hands fairly frequently. People love the idea of having one. And then, again, going back to the experience, I've driven one once, not for a very long time. I thought, oh, this is interesting. But for the people who buy them and the other kinds of cars they tend to have, it's not that interesting a car. And again, it doesn't have that much of a story to tell because it didn't do what it was intended to do originally by the manufacturer. For the other part, again, a lot of the Ferrari market, especially in 1960s Ferraris, which has been flat and slightly declining, again, it gets back to experience. A lot of people bought those cars to be seen in. And the driving experience wasn't that interesting to them. Now, I happen to think they're very interesting to drive. But if something is being bought as a fashion accessory, it tends to drive prices up and down faster. With the Lamborghinis, again, conventional wisdom also applies here because forever people said, oh, Countaches are really neat cars to look at, but of course you can't drive them. You can't see out of them, and they're hot, and they're uncomfortable. And people realize, you know what? They're no hotter or more uncomfortable or more difficult to see out of than 16 other cars, but I really think it's neat, and I love what it represents historically. So people who weren't in the market for a Countach 10 years ago are suddenly looking at them. So I think that, again, we come back to what we talked about before, two things. One is the basic characteristics of value. Is this car important for its time, for its age? It doesn't have to be a limited production car. People, by the rules of collecting, no one should own a first-generation Mustang. They built millions of them, and they're not very good cars, frankly. They're Falcons and drag. But emotionally, they connected with so many people. And that's why they still, you can buy a Mustang today, a 65 Mustang, and not lose a cent on it and own it for 5 years. Maintain the car well, and you're good. So it's about the personal connection. For me, I'll say my bottom line is this. I say this for myself and for my clients. If there's a car that makes your pulse race, that gets you to do the things you want to do, to meet the people you want to meet, and you pay X dollars for it, the next day, if someone only is willing to give you half of what you paid, it doesn't matter because the car hasn't changed. It's still going to do for you what you wanted it to do and what it does do.
Well, I'm with you, brother, but explain that to the wife. That's all I got to say.
Listen, she says if this is the car that gets you out of the house on the weekends, then go ahead. By all means, you should buy that car.
Well, if we had more time, Donald, I'd ask you what Jay Leno was like in real life.
You know what he's like in real life, Adam.
He's exactly as he is.
Yeah. What you see is what you get.
Absolutely.
I always tell people, people always go, what's Dr. Drew like in real life? I'd go, have you ever seen him or heard him or anything? Yeah. Then you know him, which is a high praise, really, for any celebrity. The website, automotiveevaluationservices.com, is where you can go in the Audrain Newport Concourse and Motor Week. That is today, as you hear this, through October 3rd. And you can go to the YouTube channel, Audrain Museum Network. Donald, always great to speak to you. Hope next time you're in L.A., you can stop by and kick some of our tires.
Absolutely. I can't wait, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you, Donald Osborne. All right. You got a spot there, Matt?
Yeah. From a word from our friends at Geico, whether you own your home or rent your home, we know it could be a lot of hard work, but you know it's easy. It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.
Oh, man.
Love Donald Osborne. He always looks like he's ready to go to Goodwood Revival. Like at the drop of a hat, he's on a plane. He's already dressed. He's ready to go.
We have on the screen, it says F1 versus Indy at Long Beach. But
oh, you really meant Road Atlanta? I thought you just meant like street courses. I'm sorry.
No. I said
Oh, you said Atlantic, Formula Atlantic.
Formula Atlantic cars.
What was the lap times of Formula Atlantic versus the lap times of IndyCar? Probably not an easy thing to Google, but...
Well, they just had a race at Long Beach.
I don't know where lap times are for those.
they'll have the lap times for the Indy race, and they'll probably have the lap times for the vintage race.
Somebody would, yeah.
I said the word formula, which is true, and I said Atlantic, which could be like Atlanta.
There you go. See?
There you go. But right. It's still formula.
Don Osborne would agree with me.
Formula Atlantic. Well, the part where I'm saying the smaller cars, don't know. A Formula Atlantic.
Formula Atlantic is a type of car.
It's a type of car. And they had the vintage race, the Formula Atlantic vintage.
Although I guess it doesn't really matter when you get the lap times, when they were new or on a vintage race. I think the point is
yeah, it doesn't have to be from last weekend, but it would be. It'd actually be more, maybe a little more interesting from last weekend. Actually, I do know this. I do believe I was talking to someone who was driving one of those Millen Z cars, turbo Z cars, who went out and set the pace a couple of years ago in the vintage race, and he was saying that he had a higher top speed on Shoreline than the Indy cars did. Now you can go, how's that possible? Well, a couple things. One is it's a vintage car and you can run huge rubber on it. You're not really, I mean, they had regulations, but it's not what it is now where you have to have the same size. I don't know. Does Indy have the same size front and rear tire, whatever it's, but you don't get to put the 14-inch slicks on the back of the Indy car per se. And then also, you know, they have air restrictions and flow restrictions and, you know, D this and D that, and they may be capped at 550 horsepower or something like that. The Z car, if you turn up the wick, you could be at 800 horsepower on that car. So you think to yourself, well, the modern car's got to be so much faster, but not when the vintage car's got another 250 horsepower and another 2 ounces of rubber.
Then it's
on the
in
back.
Drag race mode at that point. And like you're saying, big horsepower, big tire means, you know, I mean, obviously more weight, but
right.
But then it's a drag race at that point. It's just, you know, who's going to get on the brakes and make that turn at the end of Shoreline?
all right. So maybe we'll bring you that info on the next show.
Lap times for Formula Atlantic.
Yeah. I'm
only saying it based on they just had a vintage race. And I've done enough vintage racing where they will oftentimes post, here's the winner. And, you know, here's the top 10 in order. And they'll give you the fastest lap.
Yeah.
Next to the person's name. You know what I mean? Like on lap four, they turned a 121.7. You know, like that's how they'll break it down.
Yeah, I agree. It's just not going to be on like Wikipedia. It's going to be on...
I get it, Matt.
Okay. I'm just saying, it's not going to be there because it's not that type of info.
It'll be somewhere at some point. And sometimes it takes a week for them to put that shit up as well. But usually, if you go to the website of Long Beach Grand Prix or whatever and look at the weekend results or something. Like if you do results on Long Beach Grand Prix or something, it'll do the truck race result.
It does have that, but for some reason Historic Formula doesn't have the race results posted.
Oh, that's weird.
Formula Atlantic.
Formula Atlantic, yeah.
All right. Well, maybe...
And that goes for the other years too, so I'm wondering if they're just not posting or keeping track of it.
So, like, when they do the weekend results, they do the Indy who won, and they'll probably put a time.
IMSA, Super Drift, Speed Energy, Super Trucks.
What was the IMSA then? Oh, the IMSA had a race.
IMSA. Well, this is I'm on the 2019 page right now.
Right. Oh, okay. That's okay.
But yeah, so IMSA is like best lap times are around like from 112 to 117.
Okay. What did the Indy cars do? Did you find that?
The same year, the Indy cars would be, let's see, lap average speed, elapsed time. They're not giving me average lap time here.
Hmm. All right.
We'll get to it next week.
Make a note of it, but I think we'll find the result from last week. I'd be curious what the Formula Atlantic did. Fine. Baltimore, Magoobies, Joke House, November 5th. Two stand-up shows there. You can come on out in Philadelphia or outside of Philadelphia. Keswick Theater, November 6th, doing stand-up there. Go to amcarolla.com for all the live stuff and go check out our Pluto channel, Chassis, Chassy. 687, I believe. Lots of free stuff there. What do you got, Motorator?
Got to drive a Lamborghini Huracan STO and a couple of other vehicles. Posted all up on my social media. Check me out at Motorator.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Donald Osborne and Matt, the Motorator DeAndrea, saying mahalo. Oh, no, saying keep the air in the spare in the bag of the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.